All right. Good afternoon. We got Rec Radio episode 43 here with Elio Trades. Bring him on a little bit. 43 episodes. Yeah, that's quite a few.
I made every one. I've been on every one.
Have you been on every one?
Every one. King of Rec Radio.
Wow. A regular teacher's pet. People, your fucking grade school teacher would be proud of you, buddy. Great attendance record. Oh, Seth, do you want to introduce the sponsors here? And tell us where you're tuning in from today.
Yeah, I'm still in St. Kitts for one more day, flying back to London tonight. And I'll be back with my full setup.
You really look like you're at a tropical. You really look like you're at a tropical paradise. Like
it's always just a white wall.
You look so depressed for someone who's literally by the beach in the Caribbean.
Well, he's inside talking to us. It's fucking terrible. Terrible.
Yeah, it's also probably too hot to go to the beach. Like it's not like it's like 40 tough. Degrees, so it's too hot. Yeah.
All right, who's sponsoring the show?
Who's sponsoring our show?
So why don't you introduce me to that crowd out? That's what people are here for. I don't care about this.
As you guys know, this show is sponsored by Rollbit, so please check out rollbit.com for all your degenerate needs. There's a bunch of stuff on there, so please go check it out. The first code we have to give away today on the Rollbit platform is RectCity262, and I'll put that on the YouTube as well. You guys can watch this stream live on video. Just check out our YouTube channel, youtube.com/rugradio.
Yeah, thanks, Osef. I don't know. What do we want to get into before the show today? Anything special? I mean, like, the world looks like it's burning down to me, but, you know, it always
What the
is.
Hell happened?
Like, what do you mean?
What was with, like, the spike and then the drop? Like, what was the...
KBM sold.
Well,
what's
there's
the deal
a little
there?
Bit of liquidity games going on, and then, I mean, they're short squeezing overnight the cartel, and then you know we had a little bit of cartel. Bounce in the futures.
who's in the cartel?
CZ and I don't know, a bunch of Chinese guys probably. But anyway, there was some futures action overnight. It looked like maybe we'd cool off a little bit, a little relief rally in equities, and then you know they just smacked back down. Rates are fucking parabolic as all hell. Dollar parabolic.
Oil, man. Oil's at $94 almost.
Inflation seems sticky. The Fed looks fucked. I mean, like, the market does not look great. Like, what is it? The Magnificent Seven? Magnificent Seven is, like, all the returns for equities. I don't know. I don't know, bruv.
Do you think it's... do you believe in higher for longer?
Yeah, it looks fucking atrocious. I think we're screwed. And the real estate markets are frozen. Like, I don't know, man.
So you think we're going to be higher for longer?
Correct.
What about interest rates?
Isn't that what you mean with interest rates?
It's just a terrible joke. It's like not even a funny joke.
Is that a joke of some kind? What the fuck?
I don't know. Kind of a weird one as well. Did you? we'll leave it at that. We should just bring on Elio because I just feel like this.
Yeah,
is
Elio,
why don't
you come on with it? We run away with
Save
this
conversation.
I think you're muted what do you right think, now, what? Elio.
Why, what's going on, guys? Going on, thanks for having me.
We're just getting hammered. Like I felt like today was the one day where stocks were going to rally. Sorry, where crypto was going to rally. We've outperformed stocks pretty well, KBM. You have to give crypto that. Right?
I mean, on what time frame? I mean, like,
like two hours, 3 hours
on a 2 hour time frame, tick by tick.
There was a little bit of relative strength. That's what led me to take the overnight, like a little long scalp. But that slapped back down. I would say that's pretty bearish. What?
Did you hold on or did you monetize it at the top?
Oh, no. I got out at the top, but then I bought back in and lost.
Classic.
But, like, if I didn't get back in, it would have been a fucking great day.
I feel like that's like a verbal KBM tweet. Like, all your tweets are always like, I just got the sickest trade, but then I gave it all back.
Exactly. See, that's what it is with me. It's like, you know, I get it in my hand. It's like a slippery fish. My P&L just slips right out sometimes. I should just keep the fish and cook it. Instead, I'm like playing with it. I don't know. That's not a good metaphor. Don't just cut that out.
We need some like KBM slippery fish memes now with like your hands like trying to catch this like slippery fish.
This Paul Blart Mall Cop. What's the name of the Patrick? What's the name of the guy, the actor that looks just like you? this meme that's been going around?
Bro, whoa. You know what it looks just about. Like me? Like, it's a fucking AI face swap. Let's not get carried away. You mean...
Is it not you?
I mean, it's my face on a fucking fat guy, but, like, jeez, come on.
That's the one that Kevin James meme?
Yeah,
Kevin James. The Kevin
it looks
James?
Like me, it's my face.
Was it your face or was it
a face swap? Yes, it's a face swap. Are you serious?
I don't know.
Wait, so was it the original Kevin James image original? That went viral? Or was it your face swap that went viral?
Yeah, it was the original, but now okay. Then that Greg guy on Twitter used my face one and not the Kevin James one, and it kind of like blew up more. I don't know.
Oh, honestly, right. I can't tell.
Is this just a fat KBM?
That's Kevin James.
this is
get KBM. Mine up there.
Can we do a comparison of the two images?
I mean, I don't know if we can.
No, probably. Nobody's asking if you're related or how closely. I'm saying the chat. I'm promising.
He's my dad.
This
is Greg. Is Greg the first crypto product to go mainstream to reach product market fit? I feel like Greg is really like one of our own. That's really just crossed over into this pop culture.
Person like he just like yeah, definitely crossed over. I don't know what his origins are.
Oh, he's definitely a crypto dude. Like he started off like he's always talking about like NFTs and crypto, but like obviously less so now. He more talks about like chocolate milk day and stuff.
Yeah, and just like replying.
He got the Tesla right from.
He got SBF bought him a Tesla.
Oh, really?
And then they've offered it back.
Oh, they did. Okay, makes sense.
The FTX estate has asked for a bunch of money back, but I don't know. I think they asked for it back, but
they're trying to get the fallbacks. That's Kevin James again, bro.
Is this Kevin James or the one with you?
That's one with Kevin James. Go to my Twitter and fucking grab the. Oh, somebody just posted it. I'm gonna link it to you in the private chat, Sam, so you can grab it, and then we can get on with our lives. I just linked it here.
Okay. Oh, here we go.
Did you grab it?
Here, right?
That's
wow.
Kevin James? No, that's me. That one's me. Okay. Anyway, I am smoking a pork butt as well. If we want to comment on that, it's in the smoker right now.
What does that mean? Is that code?
It could be. Unfortunately, it's not. It's literally me putting
size chat over.
I'm getting some early morning ass.
Tell us what you really mean.
I'm getting early morning ass from
so hold on. So like, I didn't even see when you posted that. So these are just like permeating out now into like normal culture. It feels like you're just going to be seeing your face all over now. Whatever Jaden's done is now on mainstream.
Now that I do these AI face swaps because of fucking Jaden, now I'm just like going to be some weird AI person. It seems like, I don't know.
Yeah, you are.
Just like, I'm like the skin changer from Game of Thrones and shit. I actually have that one too, if you need it.
Pudgy penguins.
Yeah.
Pudgy keyboard monkeys.
Yeah. Speaking of pudgy penguins, how about that? We got the deal going with Luca bringing it to Walmart. And some little Web3 to brick and mortar integration there. That's pretty mainstream. What do you think? What do you guys think about that?
I mean, it's obviously fantastic. Yeah.
Yeah. He's just making us all look like LARPs, if I'm honest, man. Like, the guy's 24. bought a project, just spent a few million dollars on a project, having already had another successful business, which was basically a rug. They did like a double mint rug, and then turned it around. And now it's just like, yeah, just clearly that business is going to be worth, you know, 100 million or whatever. Like, he's crushed it. He's done really, really well.
Yeah. I mean,
anyone who talks with Luca for more than like 2 minutes can get the sense that this guy's a very serious actor in the world. And, you know, I met him, I think, I don't know, he was already getting hyped from people and stuff. I think it was like 9 months ago or something like that. But, we had lunch and I walked away being like, you kidding me? This guy's got it dialed in. And so, there was no question in my mind that he would do something awesome with Pudgies. But yeah, I think he's exceeded everyone's expectations with the speed and the quality. And I mean, it just makes it really, really, really clear, like what every NFT business should be doing, which is building a product, taking it to market, making their customers happy. It's just not rocket science. I think, you know, my view on NFTs in general has been obviously not talking about art, which I don't know a lot about. You guys know a lot more than me. Is that like the ambiguity of it all the we don't know what it's going to be, it could be all of these things, has led to a lot of the negativity, right? You have like these ambiguous ideas of what they might be. Whereas, you know, when you have something very specific, like Luke is showing, it makes people happy because there's a clear delivery upon the idea that was proposed. And I think that whether or not you succeed or fail, having a very specific plan is very good. And I, that's sort of what I think is playing out, obviously on the non-art side. I just want to be very clear on that.
Yeah, I agree. Like he basically set out and did exactly what he did. But like so many other people said they were going to do the same thing. Like there was one of like 50 different cuddly toy animal PFPs, right? It wasn't you. I guess pudgy penguins were pudgy and, you know, they're cute, but there were so many that could have done this and they just didn't. They didn't even do it with some of those specific plans. Like it's I just think it's really, he's done like an incredible job. There's a lot of people that could have started with the same thing and just never really followed through. And it's crazy when you, I was saying the other day on our show, like we have an analytics site called DGens, and we regularly I go through like the homepage because we have like the main projects, and I just like clean out the projects, and there's just so many that just they're just gone. Like just the amount of money we spent on all those projects, and yeah, just all of them floor price got decimated.
Hard to execute, right? I think like Luca came in from like a real world spot where he had executed previously, and you know, knew how to be a leader and like a businessman of sorts, where it's like a lot of the NFT projects just started out as making a collection and just rolling the dice with no experience and maybe not making the right hires and all that kind of stuff. Whereas he kind of had that experience and took it forward and really executed on it.
Yeah, he knows what he's doing. You're in the gaming space though, mainly, right? I know you've done a few projects in that space, and obviously you're in, like, people know you as being one of the like the best known, I know, content creators as well in the space. I know you have a huge audience on YouTube and across many platforms. But yeah, maybe you give a bit of background about yourself. I know you've been in crypto for a while.
Yeah, I got into crypto in sort of mid to late 2017. And I was bounced around startup scene in LA for about a decade before then. Was really attracted to the product side of things. That was what really captivated me. Learned about sort of decentralized money and all that kind of after being very, very much so falling in love with the concept of sort of disintermediated versions of these products and services and what the potential for that was. And so I kind of came in, I think a lot of people come in through sort of Bitcoin and then make their way into altcoins. I kind of came in at like the far like extreme side of like stuff that wasn't quite working yet and still quite isn't working yet as much as I think it would be. And then sort of saw the rise and fall of the hope of 2017. And in 2018, just with my business partner was like, what went wrong? You know, like why is this the way it is? And sort of just really gauging sentiment and as realistic and as pragmatic of a way as we could. And so we were like, okay, so like everyone's leaving because no one really cared. What would work? Like what would work in this environment of late 2018 bear stage market? And we just went through every product category we could think of, and we would do like the strength, weaknesses, opportunities, threats, like a SWOT, like a basic SWOT analysis on them, and just sort of trying to like go through like, hey, like what is the product category that we could see in this like horrific stage of the market being appealing? And it just kept coming back over and over and over again to gaming. And we were like, okay, well, I would love to play a game, even if there was just some tangential benefit, like an NFT you could hold or something like not necessarily speculation driven. That was kind of the core thesis, was that if it's all speculation driven, you just get boom bust constantly. And like, there's gotta be something you can engage with that you care about on a non-speculative basis. And that's where I became obsessed with the idea of gaming and the economies of scale of gaming. And then I found out all these stories about how the early World of Warcraft Bitcoin trades were going on. And it all just makes so much sense. And really, there's not another digital market where people are buying stuff just to use it digitally outside of gaming. It's not quite there yet anywhere else. And in the video game world, people buy digital outfits, they buy digital stuff because they enjoy using it for its intrinsic value. And so understanding that that just doesn't exist anywhere else yet besides gaming, but that there's this whole market of people who are addicted to playing these games and will, once they like the game, will very voluntarily and excitedly engage in buying digital things, it's very clear that this is the right market. It's just very hard. It's a very competitive field, right? Gaming is an extremely competitive industry. And so I think it's fair to understand that games take several years to build. And it's also fair to understand that not all of them will be hits, but it's a matter of time before we end up with the hit game that gets people excited about this stuff. And, you know, once they like the game, they're not going to care. All those stigmas that we talk about are not going to be an issue at all. I say that, you know, it's the strong opinions, loosely held generation. They're going to feel, you know, if you ever felt super strongly about something and thought it was evil, and then you learn a little bit more about it, all of a sudden you realize it's not only not evil, but it's actually kind of cool. It's like there's a rebound effect on when you have a super strong opinion with very little information. And so I'm very excited for that moment. But since that 2018 sort of eye-opening moment, it's just everything that I've done has been, how can I push this forward? How can I build something and be a part of it? And so, you know, the gaming space has definitely been what has inspired me. And along the way, you know, and so we have a project that we founded around sort of DeFi around NFTs called Superfarm, which has now become focused on gaming. There's a marketplace tech that we put out called Gigamart. Obviously, the marketplace space has changed tremendously after the launch of Blur, removal of royalties and all these things. You know, we decided we did not want to do token farming. We did not want to take away royalties. Those are decisions we made because we just didn't think it was the right direction for the industry. We also think it doesn't end well. We don't see how it ends positively. So, you know, things like that are decisions we've made, design decisions. But in the end, you know, we have a game called Imposters that we're working on bringing to market. We believe that sort of the creator side of things is definitely the most important to focus on because it's cultural. So, you know, the game style that we're building in Imposters is all about how can we service content creators in the gaming space, give them a sort of canvas to create videos with, help them entertain their audiences through gaming. And we think that by earning the sort of excitement and trust of content creators, that's the best contribution. And it's also a different path to market than we see a lot of people taking. So we're excited about that. And then along the way, after sort of metaverse mania popped off, my channel became very much in the spotlight because I've been talking about gaming exploding since 2018 when people would roll their eyes and laugh and go, what are you talking about? You know? And then all of a sudden it was the main thing. And so people were all like digging up my old videos being like, this guy was talking about all these coins at $0, you know? And so then I got this flood of attention and I realized there was so many projects and there was so much happening in the space that there was no way that I alone could actually manage the flow of information. And another YouTuber that I was friends with who was also similarly excited about the future, we both said repeatedly, like, look, this is the initial hypium spike, but then it's gonna fade and we'll get, you know, many years of sustained building here in this metaverse gaming space. You know, and we said many times it's gonna be gaming first. Metaverse is really far off. But we were like, how can we manage this flow of information? And we were like, let's create a community around it. And we also looked back at this sort of Bored Ape and all of the early NFTs that had really been crazy successful. And we were like, well, what was the common variable? And it wasn't necessarily what it was or what circus animal it was, but it was a group of holders that came in early being super passionate and super dedicated. And so we were like, let's launch something that's just completely earned and is free and allows for just this self-selecting group of people who are super passionate to get in. And so we created this like horrific and brutal and a little bit masochistic like treasure hunt across the internet. And it took weeks and we never anticipated it being as crazy as it was. It's called Neo Tokyo and people just went crazy for it. And then so that community is one that I'm very proud to have founded too. And it's a very different sort of outlook. It wasn't product driven. It was like, hey, let's create a community. Let's just have everybody contribute as sort of drivers of this. And let's make sure that the people who get in are like extremely deserving to get in. And it created a culture off the bat, which is very insular. It's very secretive, but it's also why there's still this passion there. And I see a lot of sort of misunderstandings about what it is. But in the end, I still consider it like an experimental thing, but it's been a really fun experiment. And there's all kinds of projects that have spun up from the people inside that community. And it's just been really fun to be a part of that. So that's been the things that I've created. Obviously, on the content side, I continue to make YouTube videos and pump out tweets. And we can talk about general sort of market outlooks and stuff. But in general, I believe that, you know, gaming is the one thing I understand as like, this is going to happen. It might not be easy, but it's the one thing that I just for sure know makes sense. And then, you know, as far as how it works and all that, like we're all figuring that model and stuff out together. But I'm really excited to see that take shape. So sort of like all the stuff that I'm involved with as a founder is very gaming centric because that's where I just see the consumer side of things. That's just where my brain works. So there's going to be other very smart people that figure out the sound money side and the innovation on scaling solutions and protocol level stuff. And we're really excited for their work, but that's just not, it's just not something that I know much about or plan to work much on.
Yeah, I found the Neo Tokyo stuff really interesting. Go ahead, Mano. You got something?
No, I was just going to... No, you go.
Well, now I lost it. No, I think I was going to say...
I was going to say, what do you think about gaming now? Like, what do you think happens here? Like, it feels like a lot of people, like you, went in with those sort of ideals, like, we can change it. This is going to be the next big thing. And now, I don't know. I go back and forth in it a bit, like... I wonder where it goes.
Let me tie in my question too, because I wanted to know more about how you see NFTs integrating in gaming and how you believe they can scale. Oh, I have a phone call. Hold on. How you believe they can scale and like the kind of like problems you're having doing that, because that seems to be one of the biggest things. And then once you finish that, I'll follow up with the follow up.
It's really simple. Like, people are overcomplicating it a lot. There hasn't been a hit yet. When there's a hit, it all changes, right? It's just takes time and effort and swings at bat. And it makes sense, right? Because gaming didn't get legitimized until Axie broke out. And that was like July 2021. Then you would imagine it takes 3 to 6 months to get funding together for these teams to sort of start throwing together their ideas, seeing the gold rush there. So teams were getting funding sort of between Q4 2021 and Q4 really 2022. And games take, you know, 2 to 4 years to build. And so you are having the cycle play out where you'll start to see masses of quality hit the market here in the next 12 to 36 months. And eventually one will be good. And it's only going to take, what I say is there's going to be like an early app store moment where one hit game is going to sort of captivate the gaming community. And all of a sudden people will go, oh, wait, this actually works. Let's see what else is out there. And there's going to be a lot of attention and not so many active products. And I believe that there will be a strong case for everything that's active, that has a decent product in market, to do very well, even if temporarily. But in the end, it's a question of content at this point. And the content is in process, right? It just takes, there's just a big lag with gaming. And so I think one of the things that I always love is the circular, And one of the reasons why crypto is so generous is because things will get very clearly validated. And then when prices go down for liquidity cycle reasons, everyone goes, well, we were all wrong, weren't we? And that's true. Like, not all of these games will be successful. But of course, there's going to be successful versions of this. Of course. It's not even, it's like, it's unthinkable to me that there won't be. And so maybe in 6-7 years, if there's no games that have ever been successful with NFTs, we can talk about it. But it's just one of those things where it's a time lag thing. And once you understand that most of the funding came in less time than it takes to build a game ago, all of a sudden you're like, okay, well, this makes sense that we have a lot ahead of us. There's going to be a lot of opportunities here, and I'm excited for them. But one game failing or the lack of every game not being successful, those are things that are to be expected. And I'm excited to sort of wrestle through this. Again, it's a very complex industry because super high risk reward on individual product level. But to me, the industry it's like more than 100% in my mind, it's going to succeed. But actually picking the winners is where it gets really, you know, it's going to be an interesting journey, right? And I think it's going to shift shape in a lot of ways. I talked with Robbie at Immutable X. I'm a seed investor in Immutable X. Very big believer in the infrastructure as an easier way to get involved. But you know, they were saying one of the things that's missing right now, like you were alluding to, is the model, right? You had this Facebook model of Farmville Mafia Wars. And once that model got tuned in for social gaming on like Facebook, everyone knocked it off. You had thousands of clones. They all were successful to varying degrees. Then you have the free-to-play gaming explosion of gaming as a service, you know, what we know of as like the Fortnite model. That once that got dialed in, all the games that are good that have the free-to-play model, massively successful if they can hold their player base. And so these models have not been proven at scale yet. But once there is one proven at scale, other gaming companies that are guaranteed, like they know when they launch the next Final Fantasy, there's going to be a big player base. They know when they launch the next XYZ title that has, you know, a franchise built-in player base, they can now say, oh, this model works. Let's use this model. But that model hasn't been proven yet. So that's another piece. You have the content and then you have the model, right? Which is how many NFTs? What type of NFTs? How do we monetize? What rights do we give to players? Where do we put it out? All of these swirling questions that for if you're a big game studio and you have a billion-dollar franchise, you punt on it, right? Because you go, there's just risk. Once that risk gets removed on the model side, how do we decide like how the variables work? All of a sudden, you're going to see mainstream titles jumping in, as well as new upstart titles sort of pushing it forward. It's going to be the biggest, I believe it's going to be the biggest industry online, because it's already one of the biggest industries in history online, money-wise. And once you add in blockchain, market caps, economies of scale, I see it swelling 10 to 100x from here. And so it's not a question to me. It's just really a matter of when. And if I had a crystal ball, I'd tell you right now. But I would say the next sort of 12 to 24 months should bring very different types of products to market, just based on how many things that are really good got funded. And we'll start to see players be like, oh, yeah, this is great, you know?
Yeah. I mean, yeah. So the NFT-based gaming model hasn't been proven, like you're saying, just hasn't had that aha moment. But I think like maybe it has to do with the player bases or who it's currently targeted. It's currently targeted to like speculators that are buying these NFTs rather than the gaming industry right now, where the gamers sort of hate NFTs and crypto. Do you have any insight as to why they like to play in their little walled gardens and like collect skins inside those games rather than own their own skins, like via NFTs and via blockchain, and why like there's such a stigma versus, you know, buying a thing from Activision whereas buying it an NFT? Very strange.
Yeah, so the history of gaming has kind of progressively seen developers find new ways to drive incremental value from players. And each step forward in gaming has actually been a negative for the players in many ways, because you just see new ways to monetize. Whereas like before, you buy a game, it would be $40, 60, $50, $60, whatever. You own the game and everything in it, and you could enjoy it endlessly. Then you switch to the free-to-play model and it was free, but really you ended up seeing like players spending way more money. And so what the microtransactions in-game currency thing, that whole new era of gaming created a lot of distrust between players and developers, right? Where you now have this belief that every new step the gaming industry takes is actually net negative for players. That is not the case with NFTs, though it could be, right? Pay to win is definitely a risk in the models, because it's always tempting for you to give those NFTs advantages that will make people just spend a lot of money, right? Pay to be good, pay to be great. That, of course, ruins the game. But once players understand, and so you have a culture, right? You have gaming as a culture. You have content creators. They need content. Content comes out. Oh, NFTs. Let's go ahead and rip this apart. It became very trendy. Just hop on, clickbait it, and rip apart NFTs as the next scam by the gaming industry. That is what happened, right? You just had a mob mentality. And again, not based on a ton of information, and certainly not a lot of really good examples to counteract that. Once players do, and by the way, I'm friends with, work like very invested in and very excited about game creators that have released titles that are like completely household names, multi-billion dollar revenue founders that are building in Web3. And they're building stuff that is super player centric and friendly, because they are also gamers and they wish that they could give that control and excitement and sovereignty to gamers. So not all these models will be predatory. In fact, most of them want to be and aspire to be great and player and net positive for players as they go through their journeys. So once that is understood and once that is shown with the product, things will switch around so quickly. And so that's why you saw this mob mentality, is that it's very justified. Players have a right to be angry because the game studios keep getting more and more and more out of them. You know, whales in Fortnite are spending thousands of dollars instead of, you know, your $60. And so the industry as a whole has gravitated to sort of its maxima on extracting value. And NFTs actually have potential to bring that back, but players don't believe it. And so proof's in the pudding, matter of time. Again, all of these things.
Yeah, this
imagine
is where I
you,
challenge,
yeah.
This is where I challenge you slightly, because I'm like, I know what you're saying, but then when I look at the antidote, which is what NFTs have brought, like, people have just been wrecked, right? Like, I'm trying to think, my next question to you is like, how would you invest in this space? Because I look at people who have invested in the coins, the NFTs, the marketplaces, like, it's like which way or the other, it's not gone well. And I kind of agree with what KBM's saying to a certain extent, which is like, is this just a reflection of human nature? Not like, we're just, it's a quick way to get money out of players. So like, by nature, like, some people debase themselves to get money out the quickest, and that just leads like a, you know, the worst situation. But like, how would you make money in this space? Like, how can we actually solve that problem, rather than the experience I think for most people who are even coming into this space has been they probably lost money.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's really, really tricky to have this conversation if your metric for success is number go down or up, and we're at the bottom of the liquidity cycle. It's just like, everything is by nature going to be valued as a failure, right? Is Bitcoin a failure? Is Ethereum a failure, right? You could say that right now because it's down from its highs. Okay, yeah, it's a failure. And was there a speculative mania? Yes, there's been a speculative mania. But is there a way for there to be NFTs and games that players use, enjoy, and hold value in general? Yeah, of course there is. Like, look at CSGO skins, right? We know that if players have ownership, and that if there is a game that people like, that there will be value ascribed there. And so it's, you know, to me, the metrics for success need to be set level. Now, the big question that I think is the question that I spend a lot of time wrestling with, and that I'm excited to help solve, is how do you take the economy of scale that worked for this initial speculative mania, the 10K collection, for lack of a better, whatever, the 10K PFP that is going to come into gaming, and how do you scale that so that the value transfer is there for players who have been part of that early cycle of holding the NFT, as well as it doesn't hinder or make negative or make worse the experience for that mass of players who are not part of that. So that is the real question here, which is essentially the mechanism that has allowed for the development meeting the actual thing that's going to give it value, which is the mass player base. That is not impossible, but it's certainly a challenge that I, again, model is one of the things that we're all figuring out here. And so it's something that I have a ton of theories on, but in the end, it will be something that's proven by the market over time. Step one is to create content that everybody wants to engage with, great game. And step two is to make sure that that game interfaces in a meaningful way with a model that actually makes it worthwhile to engage with this stuff. And I would be lying to you if I said I knew the answer, because we haven't seen it validated. But I have a bunch of theories that I think are very, you know, that make sense to me.
Did you see all these assets that are trading right now on this Mythos blockchain, the CSGO skins that are, they bought that D marketplace, and I think they're trading like tens of millions. That just made me start making me think that maybe we don't need to make the games. Like, maybe we just build the infrastructure, and like, then people can just get in on successful games, and we just make like the payments infrastructure for the marketplaces which are already there. Like, I kind of, whenever I thought about that, because I looked at gaming, because it feels as though like Parallels started to come back a bit, and you can actually even had a little bit of a mini pump. I was like, oh, maybe gaming is going to come back now. Like, it feels like it could be the start of the next cycle, right? And then I saw that, and I was like, maybe the simplest play is just actually just trade CSGO skins, but just on chain. Well,
yeah, so my problem with that is that you effectively... So there's two levels to it, right? You could either, once again, just sort of cryptofy some other behavior. And that's something that we've seen attempted to be done a lot. But to me, it's a much less significant win than sort of porting the ecosystem to a place where people actually own and can sort of build as a base layer the game assets, right? Because that can be blocked, right? What if they decide to just block that, right? You know, just like that you saw with NFT worlds, right? You saw, oh, we're gonna do all this stuff with Minecraft, blocked, right? Goes to zero. Which I know they're trying to revitalize it now too, but I didn't. So NFT world gang, I'm sorry. But the point is, if you don't own the infra and your model is fundamentally threatening to the sort of incumbent powers that be, you're sort of guaranteeing at some point that you're going to end up getting your legs cut off. And that's sort of where I see is the issue. I believe that it'll happen, but I believe that it'll, the most likely scenario here is that a startup from the NFT space, from the crypto space, succeeds at creating a game that works. Whether it has 100,000 active players or 100 million, there will be some level of sustained success. And then it will incentivize and show what's possible. It has to start, to me, with people who have all of the incentive to innovate. The current structure does not incentivize the game studios to innovate because that innovation brings risks to a model that is absolutely crushing it. So it's just kind of hard to see. One, I would say not making the games brings risk and almost guarantees at a certain point that if that blows up, that it's going to get shut down, you know? And the second part of that is that the wins that will come from actually a native title are so much bigger. I mean, in the end, so like what we're trying to do here, if you think about it, with Bitcoin is we're trying to take a system and open it, right? We're trying to take a system and open it so anyone can participate, decentralized, censorship resistant, and you're trying to make it so that the value of the network can be reflected and enjoyed by everyone without, you know, without preconditions. Same with gaming, right? You're taking this massive thing we all do online, these huge networks, right? These huge pieces of insanely valuable IP, and really they're networks, right? When you think of Fortnite, it's given value by the fact, why do I want the skin? I want the skin because I can show it off to my friends who are playing too, right? So if my friends aren't playing, I don't want the skin, right? The value is created by the network, right? And so to me, what you're doing, and the big win for gaming, is opening that network up so that it's not just one small group of people who benefit from that in a very centralized way, but you're saying, hey, look, this is the modern internet. Let's open this system up so that everyone can sort of participate at various levels. And that is the big win. And that's where I sort of fundamentally view gaming as an economy of scale, as a decentralized network. And the game is kind of a connective tissue of it. It's a little different, obviously, than Bitcoin, which is more of like a stagnant sort of network that's unchanging. Games, of course, will need to experience a lot of upgrades, changes. It'll be much more volatile. But that's the thought process, is that what if we can create an open network here that billions of people engage with, and there can be a value transfer that's accessible to all in various different ways, roles, and formats. And that, to me, is what the real ultimate goal of this is, in my mind, is opening the network. And you can't do that if you're just building as a sort of in a sort of position of serfdom, right? As just sort of a plug-in to someone else's network. And you very much so risk, I think, getting shut down.
So what would you say are like your next steps for the things you're trying to create? Are you trying to, how are you furthering along personally and the projects you're working on now? Is there any big things we should expect from those coming out?
Yeah, I mean, so like the Neo Tokyo thing in specific is some of the citizens, as we call them, within Neo Tokyo created what's called Citizen Capital, which is like a deal flow entity. You know, again, we didn't create it, they created it. And because of the sort of incredible diamond-handed, strong-willed nature of Neo Tokyo, a lot of projects come to Neo Tokyo with opportunities that are not widely available. So there's a lot of cool opportunities for citizens in there. And those are always constantly flowing through. There's been dozens, if not 100 community projects that have spun up, tons of founders networking, finding resources, devs, community managers, all the sort of things that you need to run a project. And so there's a huge healthy builders culture there. So a lot of people who want to build stuff come in, and who want to participate early in opportunities come in for that. And imposters, obviously it's all about, for us, creating a game that we believe will help content creators better understand their audiences. And we have some really cool stuff that we're working on, and it's all about bringing that product to market. We have a lot of really cool things under the hood that we're excited to reveal as far as like why we think it'll be successful and all that. But you know, in the depths of the bear market, to me, it's more about building and doing with action and showing, hey, let's build something that, you know, you see a la Luca, right? He built the product, right? He brought the product to market. Gaming is a very different product funnel than plushies. But in the end, all systems are focused on bringing this product to market. And, you know, with no with no rosy glasses on, how can we build something that a content creator wakes up, gets out of bed and says, I think I want to entertain my audience with this today. That's the choice that we want to see them make. And we think that our focus on content creators, on shareable moments within sort of socially focused games as far versus competitive games, we think that that is something that not a lot of people are focused on. It's a little bit less of a crowded lane. And you know, our backers, our VC backers agree that we're sort of in a different, you know, our thesis is different. And so, yeah, we're working really hard to bring something to market that we think gamers will enjoy because it's different, because it, especially the content creators within the space will say, hey, look, this makes my job easier. And that's what we think is the sort of product that will spread. And again, I think that if you're not removing the blockchain and crypto and thinking, how does this game stand out in the modern landscape? How does this product stand out from other games in the culture of Twitch and the culture of gaming? You're not asking the right questions. Not enough to make a good game and slap a crypto on it. It needs to just be like fresh and different. And hopefully we believe that we have the right approach.
I'm not like a really big gamer, so I don't have a lot of expertise in this field, but something that I seem to read a lot, something that comes up a lot, is always like, it takes 10 plus years and like tens of millions of dollars to make a really good AAA game. And the guys that are making them have been doing them now for decades. And that seems to be a big criticism of any like blockchain gaming ideologies from the traditional gaming world. Like, what would your counter be to that argument?
Yeah, we're not building a AAA game. The game genre that we're in, the most well-known title is called Among Us. It was an indie game built by two people, has 600 million players. And it blew up because a very small group of content creators started making content within this game during the pandemic. And it just became a cultural phenomenon. And what was clear to us is that there's a behavior there of connection, shared experience, and a new type of gaming, but really just a new type of interaction online that people really enjoy. And most importantly, it translates super well to edited YouTube content from the game, which is a huge part of online culture, as well as to Twitch culture. And so understanding that we're no longer in an arms race to create a AAA game, but really it's a creative palette for the content creators out there, is the reason why I like the way that we've gone with it. And I agree with you. I think the people who are trying to build the next Call of Duty with some slight modifications are going to have a really hard time. But you know, if the lane that you're in has almost no AAA competitors, as well as the leading game is, you know, very much so, decidedly an indie title. That's sort of the route we've chosen. I don't invest a lot into in the deals I've seen into things that resemble Call of Duty. Because I don't see how they win, because Call of Duty is just going to be, even if it's just that infinitesimal tiny little bit better, it's going to be the thing you choose for your dopamine. And so, you know, just understanding sort of what battle you're fighting. And I've invested into a lot more sort of creative, I guess, alternative approaches, which I think are going to be where, you know, we as an industry should focus, because there are going to be AAA participants here, and they're going to choose to get in when they want. I did invest in a founder's project. He's brought titles to market that everyone's played, and are hot topics here in crypto, talked about all the time. Do I believe he's going to make a AAA game and it's going to win? Yeah, he's done it so many times before. So yeah, I don't mind chucking in on his round. But it's going to be 3-4 years away. And so, you know, in the meantime, I'm really interested in seeing how, where teams can sort of work around that. But I agree with you. I think it's maybe not a full pipe dream, but it's very unlikely that you're going to see, you know, a random team create like a full AAA. I don't think AAA is really the battleground. And then if you know a little bit more about game development, one of the criticisms of Metaverse Mania was all of the flashy trailers. And that's because in Unreal Engine now, they've democratized graphics. It's really easy to make something that looks great, like amazing. Well, and
I wanted to dive into the other side. Maybe we could dive into that while you're here with the Flash stuff. That's what, that's what I was going to ask.
So other side is built on Improbable. Improbable is a company I've been following for years because it was something we looked at first when we were first looking at like, oh, how could you build like an MMORPG in 2018? And their server tech's incredible. But the biggest thing with Improbable is that server tech and fancy graphics is not fun game loop. And they've struggled to make very long-lasting, convincing titles game loop-wise. So again, other side, if you remember getting in there, it was, first of all, I would say I have big old other side Yuga bags, right? Like I have the scars to prove it, right? But at the same time, I think they have a shot, right? So I'm hoping they pull it off, certainly. I definitely wish I had bet smaller on them, but you know, in the end, I can't be too mad. Like the Yuga journey from early Bored Ape days was pretty great. So I'm not like mad at it, but at the same time, I do believe that there is a difference between looking good and being good. And that's the modern gaming sort of issue, is that a fun game loop with low quality graphics is going to bring people back over and over again. Whereas the high quality graphics have become more or less meaningless. You can get someone on Fiverr to render you absolutely amazing 3D art. You can pop it into Unreal Engine, get some kind of like prefabricated lighting setup in there. And for not too expensive of a price, you can have something looking really, really good. And so that is not even a fraction of what it takes to ship a game. So in the end, looking good and being good have become, you know, an ocean of difference. So I think that it's an unfortunate thing because there was a lot of games that created good trailers. But in the end, getting in and playing a game, it's not going to be rocket science here, fam. Like, get in and play the game. If it makes you smile, you come back, you can't wait to play again. That's what good games do. And it's, you're not going to need a college degree here to analyze this stuff. Like, it's going to be actually the opposite, right? Like, kick your middle school kid in there, tell them what they think, you know, and if they love it and they just can't wait to play again. Like there's your answer. And so, again, it's a matter of time. And I think it's just one of those things where I kind of love it right now because the access to deal flow, the access to talent right now in the gaming industry, gaming's had a little bit of a cool down. They were all very stock-based as well, like the tech companies. There's a big sell-off in gaming. And so talent's really easy to get a hold of. Deal flow has come down to earth. For me, it's like a great time to be a believer in this because the belief is zero. And the opportunity to me is infinity. And I just like those odds, you know? And so I like the setup right now of people all saying it's a zero. I hated the setup of everyone and their mom being a metaverse expert because it was really just so noisy. And now it's like, okay, really easy to get in on any round, really easy to meet incredibly high quality founders, builders. And if you're building in this space, hit me up. I'd like to talk to you.
So I like what you're saying. So like you have to focus on the creators creating content around the game, and then that drives it. I have seen the Dr. Disrespect like came into this space, right? And he's obviously one of the most well-known streamers, and he's got his own thing, and it hasn't really taken off, or like hasn't really taken off compared to what he would do with, let's say, his normal gaming content. Like what's gone wrong there? Because I haven't really looked at it. All I saw is that it hasn't really happened. And it's not done yet. Right?
He's just still building it. Yeah, it's still in testing and early development. I think Doc's gonna. I'd be shocked if the Doc doesn't deliver here on some level of success. And to me, that was a deal that you could have gotten in if you wanted to invest through Citizen Capital and Neo Tokyo. So in the end, I think that there's going to be a lot of various forms here. But I would say that. If the perception is that Doc's failed here, I think that I wouldn't agree. I think that he's in the early stages of success. What degree of that success? Well, is this going to be, you know, Call of Duty? Probably not. But will he create a very strong, thriving online community around this game? Will the NFTs in the game that are super scarce be meaningful to the people playing the game? Yeah, I think so. So it's really just a question of like, maybe tossing aside some of the NFT mania ideas or valuations and saying, well, what would this mean if there was a million people playing this game and there was only one of this item, you know, or 10 of this item or 1,000 of this item? What would it mean if these people play this game every day? Are they obsessed with Doc Disrespect and he's playing it with them every day and you could get in the lobby with Doc and play with him? I think that like when you start thinking of it on the human level, it makes a lot more sense. And again, Doc and Midnight Society are very early stage, right? It's still, you know, I don't think anyone expected for it to be anything other than what it is right now. I think, in fact, when I talk to founders, other founders in the space, they look at what Doc's doing and go, we're trying to do that. So there's a lot of AAA people who are looking over going, oh my God, like that's huge. So, you know, founders that have done this before are saying, you know, this is the next wave. So, I'm very excited by that. I really think that, as with all things, noise and FOMO are terrible for almost everything, right? Cause the price and cause value and price get dislocated. And that happens at the bottom too. And I think that, one of the hardest things was for people chasing the bull run, because you knew the opportunity for going fast was better than the opportunity for doing it well. And now it's the opposite, right? Where you're actually incentivized to go slow and to do it right and to take your time because there's no gun to your head. And I just think that, you know, the conditions right now are fantastic. You guys are traders. You love a good trade, right? You want to buy low and you want to sell high, right? And I think that there's just a constant equivalence of price and success. And if you're able to decouple those and say price and valuation are going to be driven by market cycle and the actual progress is probably moving faster, doing better than it has been. There's more teams doing better work now than there were in 2021.
Yeah, I mean, I'd have to agree with you there. Definitely need the price and expectation dislocation to get out of people's head. People just want things too fast nowadays. No one has an attention span anymore. But anyway, man, we got to start wrapping it up. We're going to ask some closing questions. I thought it was a really fun show. It was super interesting to talk about gaming the whole time. Actually, one of the closing questions I have is for everyone here, because we got to make gaming fun again. Let's all give our best gaming experiences that we've ever had and what it was and in what game.
Zelda,
man. You want me to start it off?
Zelda.
I'll just start it off. Mine was probably playing some EverQuest back in the day and catching like a ceremonial vestment drop and just an amazing robe and being able to trade that for actual real money when I was done with the game. So maybe I was just destined to be in the trading and NFT space game. And some of those Diablo 2 trades were the best. It's just so fucking epic as well. What about you guys?
Zelda Maxi.
I listened to that. To like the theme song to Zelda where I work still because I find it so like chilled when I work.
Yeah, I think awesome. For me it's probably I really like playing chess. Play a lot of online chess. That probably doesn't count as gaming, does it?
Yeah, but wow.
I got into when you play chess online on chess.com, you can like type messages to the other person. I was playing this random like 13-year-old kid from Indonesia, but he was like really like heckling me and like saying stuff like you're not good and stuff, and it was one of those games. It's like a 5-minute game, so they're really quick, but it's one where it's like I won, then he won, then I won, then he won, so it went all the way to like 15 all or something, and I was playing for about 2 hours, and then eventually I won like the last game and he quit, like rage quit, and that was like my best game
experience. Oh wow.
What about you, Elio?
First of all, remember when I told you that there would be games that you have played where the founders are coming into Web3. Well, you validated that, Keyboard Monkey. And so, little hint there. But anyway, the my best game experiences probably are middle school playing Warcraft 3. I actually had 3 copies of the game because I was so addicted to it. My parents would take it away. And I would be like, all right, I won't play. Thanks. Yeah, you got me, you know? And then I'd just plug in my next copy and I'd rotate those. And so, those were that or just the old school 007 with the Pizza Night type childhood nostalgia. Goldeneye. Yeah, Goldeneye. Yeah, all that. I mean, obviously, I aggressively love playing on new games as well. But of course, those memories when you're younger are going to be the nostalgia. So that's what I'll go with.
Of course, always chasing that nostalgia dragon when I fire up a game nowadays, and it's pretty hard to catch.
Before you guys sign off, I wanted, because you guys are all traders, and I know you talk about this stuff a lot.
Do anyway, but you go ahead.
But really, really quick, like, isn't stagflation the time for Bitcoin to thrive? Like, isn't that like what gold and Bitcoin are designed for? Isn't that where we're at, fam? Like, isn't isn't it all?
I mean,
perfect. Isn't it all just perfect?
Narratives keep failing left and right. Who the hell knows anymore? But one would assume.
I think so.
Maybe down the line. Maybe down the line.
I think so. But the thing about these is that, like, when you have sell-offs like this, or there could be another one coming, correlation just goes to one. And although it's a stagflation hedge, it's also, like, liquid. And if you've seen the amount of household savings from people right now, I think I saw the other day that excess savings have been depleted for everyone but the top 20% of people in America. So you're sitting there and you're not in the top 20% of people. Even if you're in the top 20%, you can still think it's a great stagflation trade, but like it's also just kind of cash in your bank account, which you can just instantly liquidate. So I think crypto always gets hurt in liquidity events. So I think this is more just like a sustained hit to the consumer, even though decentralized value, I think, is a big thing. I think that like getting value away from just a fiat currency is the time.
But isn't it like I mean, if you're talking about people who are in the bottom 50% of American or global income, like how much money do you think that is going to take on the chart? Like, that's not really the holder base, I think, for Bitcoin, right? I think like that might be true, but how many more liquidity events can happen with Bitcoin before really the people that are just not. And they're just not going to sell, right? I think you tweeted it. They were like, the sellers are just exhausted, right? I don't say we go down. I think we could have a horrific spike down, but I'm looking over the next 18 months. It's hard for me to think that there's consistent liquidity pressures based on household savings. It just, those two things just feel totally different to me, but I might be wrong. Yeah. Maybe I brought this up way too late in the episode, but I know OSF he's looking longingly at the beach.
At the beach. The highest amount of long-term holders owning Bitcoin right now. And I think it's like 100% of short-term holders are at a loss. So I agree with you. Like, FTX took us to like 16,000. Yeah. And ETH was at like 1,100. That felt like a much worse liquidity crisis. Like, I don't really know who's capitulating now. Yeah. Like, it's really the OGs capitulating right now. So I agree with you. Like, I don't see us going to that level.
It doesn't have to go up to outperform either. It could just like go down less or stay in a range right here as other shit goes down. That could be the case as well if there's no natural
selling. I'm bullish.
And that's KBM's a win. Bearish. So there you go.
But KBM's anyway, always bearish. We like.
Oh no, no! I'm only. Like it's been time to be bearish. All right. Anyway, one last question is how not to get wrecked. If you give advice to our viewers, and then we're gonna bring three people up, or actually two, because we have to do one from last week to spin loot boxes from Rollbit, and they're gonna get some NFTs. We actually threw some imposters in there, so stick around, Elio.
Let's see go.
Anything. So how do you not get wrecked?
How not to get wrecked? I had put out a video yesterday. I call it the double barbell. I have you know, my assets split roughly between crypto and or Bitcoin and crypto and treasuries right now. So I have a bunch of cash and then I have a barbell over without anything really in between. And I have a ton of Bitcoin and crypto. And within crypto, I have a barbell, which is mostly Bitcoin and Ethereum, some Coinbase stock, as well as some Solana. And then I have stuff where I don't really see the value of going to like further out on the risk curve for 10, 20% more gains on like the top 100. I just have a chunk where I'm like, either it goes to zero or infinity. And that's sort of my mental model on the double barbell. I have cash and crypto, and then I have crypto. I have boomer coins that are gonna, in my opinion, eventually go up. And then I have stuff where it could be life-changing or it could be zero, but that gets reduced to such a small you know, chunk of my overall portfolio that I sleep at night and I do get wrecked. I do get wrecked, but I don't get wrecked. I get lowercase wrecked where I can laugh it off because you win some, you lose some. But I think you get not wrecked by essentially having your stuff spread out, you know, and eventually understanding that if you buy when everyone else is buying and you sell when everybody else is selling, that's how you get wrecked. So, you know, usually you want to somehow invert that.
Good advice.
Yeah, absolutely, brother. Appreciate that.